It's Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio and a very special programme because I'm delighted to be joined by Pat Chambers and Pat for the last time.
I know, Craig. I'm going to miss you all so much, but I retire shortly, so it will be sad to say goodbye to you all, but yes, so this will be my last interview.
Well, Pat, we couldn't let it pass without having a bit more time than we usually do and talk to you about all the work you've done for the CDDFT charity in the time you've been here.
I'd be delighted to do that. I think the most exciting thing when I started is the Trust has had a charity for a lot of years. I mean, going back really into the 50s, 60s, with people giving, but as I came on board, we weren't what you would class as being a proactive charity. We actually just took passive donations on wards or departments. And if I'm honest, when I joined, we were a little bit of a savings bank, that people were making donations and they were going into the charity bank account, but we didn't have a structure or a system to be able to really promote to wards and departments how to access that charity money and how to be able to apply for things that would be transformational for patients in those various settings, not only in hospitals but out in communities.
So the charity is unrecognisable from when you come in, but when did you start with the Trust?
Oh, back in June 2017. And on day one when I started, and I didn't have anything at all.
An office? Did you have a desk?
No, it was hot desking. Didn't have anything, didn't have a laptop at that point, didn't have any contacts internally or externally. And I remember saying hello to Sue Jakes, who was on the exec corridor, and she had me in the office. And on day one, she asked if I could raise £1 million to help put an MRI scanner into Darlington Memorial.
I remember that campaign. And clearly they have already got the MRI scanner, so you succeeded in that task then.
Well, on Thursday she asked me if I could make it £2 million because I wanted to put one in Bishop Auckland. So working on my own with no network, internally or externally, it needed to change. And I'm delighted to say that the community really rallied around the appeal. We got front page news with the Northern Echo. I've still got a picture of that up in my office that I do now have an office. I've still got a picture of that, but we got lots of local PR and support, and really that was an open door for us to get to meet Rotary Clubs, Freemasons, WIs and other groups and associations that could help us in that appeal. They were really tremendous in their support.
So clearly you came into an organisation that there was no structure and organisation, then you've turned it into what it is today, which is a finely tuned machine. How did you do that? You know, how did you get up from the ground and just make it happen? Because you don't just raise an individual doesn't just raise £1 million. Well, you did. raising £1 million with literally nothing. How did you turn it around?
Just hard graft. I think the reality was, as in every ward and department, the charity was just the same. We were thin on the ground with resource. Initially, I was just the resource. There wasn't anybody
else. You were
the
charity team.
I was the charity team. I still very much talk of the we are the charity team. But of course, we're just currently just a team of two on the proactive. We've got Sean across in finance as well, so three. We are a tiny team supporting the 8 hospitals and all of the community locations. So it's been really good. I think the reality that hit me when I started was it was all about income generation. The reality is that the Trust was very ambitious in what it wanted to do, had a great vision of things that it could do to transform the patient experience along the way. And my part of that commitment was to actually unlock the money, to be not shy in retiring, but in every possible situation I'm in, to ask, would they donate to me? And I still continue to do that with a passion.
Well, I'm going to share a story with you now. And one of my first experiences with Pat, and then talk about not being shy, is that we found ourselves on a committee together. And Pat was there making the case for some software to help manage the charity. And she obviously got what she wanted, of course. But then at the end of the committee meeting, she then took out of her handbag packs of raffle tickets. And she flogged me a tenner's worth of raffle tickets. I was like, I've just been stitched up. And anyway, she went round the table with these raffle tickets. I thought, I like her. And that was one of my first meetings with Pat. And I thought, yeah, she's not shy. Shy Ben's getting out, as they say. And yeah, Pat sought me 10 quid's worth of raffle tickets. I went into the committee to talk about the software.
I know. You know, the strap line for the charity is donate, volunteer and fundraise. And I suppose all of my career, I've looked at that everybody we can meet, they maybe can or they can't for any reason donate. Perhaps they could fundraise, do a cake bake or take part, as lots of people did for us this weekend in the Great North Run, for instance. Or they could volunteer and, you know, the time. People have so many hidden skills and talents that sometimes they don't share because they get stuck in a rut where they are. And I've come across some amazing people who have said, oh, you know, well, actually, I do this. Or in my one of my hobbies is like painting, and I've got all these things that I thought, oh my goodness, we need painting. We need paintings in our wards and departments. We've just got either white or magnolia walls, and please donate them to us. That would be wonderful.
We'll do it all, everything on our own. We don't need anything or if I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? I don't quite know how to say I said too much, they're not enough. If I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? Forget what we sold before we get too old. Show me a garden that's bursting into life. Let's waste time chasing cars around our heads. I need your grace to remind me to find my own. If I lay here, just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? Forget what we're sold just lay here? Would you lie with me and just forget the world?
Chasing Cars here on Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio, and I'm delighted to be sharing some time with Pat Chambers from the CDDFT charity as she says goodbye to the Trust after quite a number of years. And so we were just talking there, Pat, about people doing things. And, you know, people have come out of the woodwork and have done all sorts for the charity. So as you say, they're not just all raising money, they're helping. You've got volunteers as well.
Absolutely. Certainly in Darlington Memorial, people will have seen Joan, one of our stoic volunteers. She's 90 years of age and she sits there most Mondays and Thursdays and she fundraises for us. And Sam Nicholson, again, she's another one in Darlington Memorial particularly, who is absolutely sensational. She's currently working for Friends in the shop. Purely because our own personal resource has been so stretched, we haven't been able to support her on a day-to-day basis. But I'm delighted that Friends have been able to offer her that opportunity. And it just shows again how charities collaborate, like we do with the radio as well. We've been able to support Prince Bishop's through the charity during COVID, where you needed to be mobile to keep the station working, and the charity was able to step up and help that happen, because again it's another transformational experience of keeping our patients in touch with the world and also with each other within the Trust.
And from a Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio point of view, the studio and the equipment that we're sat in right now was provided by the charity. This was an empty room. This was a X-ray finishing room, and we set our sights on it. And I rang Pat and said, "You know, can you help us out?" And within a few weeks, we had a fully functional studio at Darlington Memorial Hospital, which hadn't been a studio for a number of years. So thank you. But you mentioned the COVID response, and really, that was going from kind of 0 to 100. You were already very active before them, but the response that happened during COVID ramped up immeasurably, didn't it?
It absolutely did. And you know, when I reflect on it, because I didn't at the time believe that as a charity we were really a part of COVID, and yet the charity team, we were still working 5, 6, 7 days a week, full time, as our colleagues were during that time. But we were very much the interface of being able to identify and respond to the real needs of the Trust in that time. Things like we were going to colleges, universities, businesses, and emptying their storerooms to get PPE. That we were still waiting for deliveries for in the Trust, things like lockers, welfare things that we got for staff. Staff were working long hours, and when they finished and went out, the supermarkets were stripped of all of their products. So, you know, for days and days, we were collecting things and putting little welfare bags together because some staff were working long hours and simply not eating because they were leaving food for the families at home and worried. So we did loads within COVID. We bought all the conferencing equipment because, again, our own personnel couldn't travel between hospitals. So the charity invested in conferencing equipment, which we still very much use now. iPads that we bought for palliative care patients, and for lots of families that was their way to say goodbye. And it was very difficult for our staff to be stood there holding an iPad with somebody on their end of life journey, but perhaps saying goodbye to their families just locally, just, you know, in Durham, or maybe across in, we had somebody in Canada and somebody in Australia that said they were so, so grateful to be able to speak to their loved one and say goodbye. And the iPads, again, we still use that technology now. It's changed the way we, or the Trust, looks and cares after its patients.
But of course, it started off for palliative care, but then hundreds more iPads arrived, didn't they? So you kind of said, well, that's a good idea. And it started off with 25 or something, palliative care iPads, and then we ended up with like hundreds of them.
Well,
pallet loads arrived, Pat, if I remember.
I know. Well, Craig, as your head of IT, you do know about those, because we had to obviously record each of those on the asset register and get them out, because once the charity's providing anything that is equipment-based, really it leaves the charity's hands and it sits on the trust's asset register. So we wouldn't be involved in the repair or maintenance of those iPads, but they were transformational because, of course, at that time, loneliness and isolation was a huge thing. So the charity previously would be providing things like colouring books, puzzle books, reading books, and of course anything that was paper-based was removed from wards and departments.
Right.
So our patients were not only not able to be supported by family and friends, but they had nothing to do on ward but watch the TVs, which the charity also bought, or listen to radio, which of course the charity also invested in radio here and bought some DAB radios out for patients, perhaps in wards or departments that weren't able to access Prince Bishop's.
So the COVID response came and went. But we're still seeing the benefits of those investments that were made during COVID, because we still use the home broadcasting equipment that you provided. The iPads are still in use on the wards. So even though that was, 2020, 2021, the investment and the things that you did for the trust back then are still happening now. They're still being benefited from now.
Absolutely. And I think during that time, this is not just me, the charity, this is the trust. And I think NHS is nationwide during that time. Collaborated in ways that they hadn't previously even imagined was possible. But of course, it changed the way that collectively we all work together, and NHS Charities Together really came to the forefront as well. It had always been a membership association for NHS charities nationwide, but became really proactive during COVID and continues to be supportive, to the point that just this last weekend at the Great North Run, I'm delighted to say that I was the one who instigated 11 NHS charities coming together under one marquee. Instead of us all being in separate 3x3 little tents round the charity village, I did say to them last year, why don't we just share the cost and all go under one marquee? We're all colleagues, we can all support each other. Some have more runners running than others, but collectively we can give one heck of a cheer and a welcome as everybody comes through the charity village.
This is Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio. We'll hear more about the Great North Run, and we'll talk about a 102-year-old gentleman who ran the Great North Run for the charity. I'm sure Pat's got a lot to say about that in just a moment.
I've seen all the girls and their pretty
run for home from Lindisfarne. And talking to Pat Chambers here on Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio from the CDDFT charity as she prepares to start her retirement from the Trust. And we'll all be very much worse off as a result. But the Great North Run, Pat, is probably one of the headline events. And you talked about it just before there about the Charities Together tent. But you managed to get, or certainly you encouraged, Bill Cooksey, 102-year-old. How did you manage that?
Oh, well, it started back when he was 100, really, to be fair.
Just 100.
Bill had actually been a patient within our hospitals, and he was a Welshman, born and bred, and very, very passionate about supporting the NHS. And when he was 100, when he saw Captain Tom, again, during COVID or just post-COVID, doing the laps of the home he was in, he, as an outdoor person, said he could do better, so he set himself the task of walking 100 miles for our charity. He did 10 miles a day for 10 days, and I can't believe it. He did that with his Zimmer frame, and he walked 100 miles, and he got a visit from Sue Snowden, the Lord Lieutenant of County Durham, who welcomed him. He was a bit disappointed that it wasn't the Queen.
Well, but, you know, set your sights high.
I know. And then when he was 101, he decided he wanted to raise money for us again, and he decided he was going to cycle 1,000 miles. So he did 20 miles a day on his trike. He was seen out and about in Newton Aycliffe and going up to Shildon and round Darlington. But he cycled 1,000 miles, and he fell off his trike and he broke some ribs and was in the hospital. So I spoke to him, and he used to be an English teacher, and he was a gifted poet, although I've got to say some of the poetry was not politically correct for today's environment, but they were very, very funny, I've got to tell you. So I actually started with him to say that we would actually publish his poems, or ones that we could publish, and we would sell the book, and we would do that. And that worked for about a week. And then he said to me, "Do you know what I'd really, really like to do?" And I said, "What would you really, really like to do?" And he said, "I've always wanted to do the Great North Run." So I'm looking at this 101-year-old, knowing that by the time of the Great North Run, he would be 102. And I thought, how on earth am I going to make that happen? And let me tell you, it was not an easy task to make that happen.
I was going to say, you probably can't just sign up online. There's probably all kinds of health and safety and nightmare, but you did make it happen. So how did that happen then, Pat?
Well, first of all, the computer wouldn't accept the age. The computer for the age wouldn't go back. So nothing on the computer would work for him. It was just
double digit.
Double digit. It just wouldn't work. I had to actually contact the Great North Run directly, and they actually had a board meeting, and they really said that they'd like us to encourage Bill not to do it. They were really worried about him dying during the race. And you know, sadly, as has been shown this last weekend, you can't predict. A young 29-year-old died. You cannot predict what will happen to everybody, but all you can do is take as many precautions as possible to make it happen. And right up until the day of the race itself, Great North Run were asking me, would he like to reconsider and not do the race? And of course, he was adamant. So much so, I'll tell you a funny, that Great North Run set the criteria of what we had to do to support Bill to be able to do this event. And one of the ones was we had to have a buddy with him. So we had Gavin from 5 Acres in Newton Aycliffe was going to be the buddy and walk with him. And we had to have a wheelchair go with him. And our own chief exec, Sue Jakes, volunteered to push the wheelchair. And Sedgefield Community Hospital kindly arranged for a wheelchair to go across to where Bill lived in Newton Aycliffe. Bill refused delivery. He said he didn't need a wheelchair, and he sent it back.
Oh, no.
I had to go back to Sedgefield and put the wheelchair in my car and say to Bill, Bill, the criteria says that unless we take this wheelchair, you absolutely cannot do it. He said, well, I'm not going to sit on it. I said, it doesn't matter if you sit on it. We've got to put that wheelchair there. So Sue Jakes, God love her, pushed that wheelchair the whole journey. And Bill walked it, and it took him 5 hours, 41 minutes. He set a world record for completing the half marathon. It was biblical proportions of rain, 34 degrees before he set off, and then the heavens opened, and it was of biblical proportions last year. And yes, he stopped twice to eat a banana. Wouldn't sit down in the chair and rest his feet. He just kept on going. So 5 hours, 41 minutes, and absolutely amazing. And on his Instagram, he got 2.3 million likes.
Wow.
We'll be right back.
Fleetwood Mac and The Chain, playing songs that Pat likes today as well, here on Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio. And if you've just tuned in, we're talking to a friend of the show, and you'll have heard Pat, you'll hear Pat's voice every day because your adverts go out for the charity. You're a regular participant on The Breakfast Show and on The Happy Hour. But as this is your last interview, we're giving you a bigger slot. And, you know, we'd like to talk about some of the events that the charity's done, because every time I go on the website, the CDDFT charity website or Facebook page, and I bring people up to date on what's happening, there's a page of events, and it varies, doesn't it? You've got people jumping out of aeroplanes, you've got golf days, tea parties, there's all sorts. So events, Pat, what's the thinking behind those then?
The events for us, a big thing for us is events have to be a balance between what we do for corporate events, where we are trying to attract local businesses who could help and support us, maybe consider becoming corporate partners to the charity. That's a business that would pay a regular donation to us each month and make a commitment to try and fundraise for us during the course of the year. To those that I would say are more public based, so very much when you talked about the festive afternoon tea or a spring fling with an afternoon tea, we're probably looking more at the community. So it may be some of the, it's not just limited to women, but afternoon teas seem to have more females attend. But we get lots of the WIs and church groups and just friends, people treating them. I mean, we have the spring one normally because it coincides in and around Mother's Day, and it's a really good opportunity to book somebody to come out and have something special. And we have the festive one because, again, it's a really good early Christmas present, and maybe you're not going to be there or be together for Christmas, and it's really good to come along. We normally get a guest speaker, have some fun. And of course, yes, I will be asking for your money, irrespective of you got your ticket and you're going to socialise. But everything we do is about fundraising to be able to help and support the trust and each ward and department to be the very best that they can be in support of our patients.
So that's the corporate sponsors, but then the events. So I've seen things where you've got people climbing up the Three Peaks and things like that, and something that you would never get me doing, I think, for any amount of money, is jumping out of an aeroplane. So do you come up with these events, or do people come to you and say, you know what, Pat, like Bill did, he said, I'd like to do the Great North Run. Do you get people say, you know what, Pat, I'd like to jump out of an aeroplane. How can you make it happen? It's a bit like, remember that programme, You Bet?
I know.
Well, my age.
It could be. The thing is, people can sign up to do things. I mean, one we haven't done as yet, but we have been asked for, is Tough Mudder. But if somebody is doing a challenge event, we would ask them to think about getting themselves sponsored when they're doing it, because it's a great time when people will support them. And, you know, as Great North Run this weekend, I know I keep on referring to it, but 67% of the participants are fundraising for charity. That is an enormous fundraiser nationwide for so many good causes. And we ask people, we put on a whole host of events. We've got some, what I would say, are core events, because we know they easily sell out and we get support, like a corporate golf day or like doing an afternoon tea. Or doing a charity ball. We've done charity balls, we've done the Burns Supper, we've done, as you say, the skydive. And I can tell you a funny story, because I used to be in the military myself, I used to be in the RAF, and I never did jump out of that plane, and I actually did 7 days jankers for not doing it. And I convince everybody when they're going to do the skydive, I keep on saying, oh, you'll love it. You'll love it. And they say, have you done it? I said, no, not exactly.
I don't blame you, Pat, for that. But you've got those organised events. But then I see people who've approached you and just said, you know what, I'm going to cut off my hair, or I'm going to do, I've seen these on the, so do you appeal to people, or do they find you?
It's a combination of both things. The cut off the hair was actually, well, two that we've had, which two young girls did that because the granddad was being treated for cancer. And of course, he'd lost all of his hair during the treatment. And the two young girls had long hair that they could sit on, and they got it cut, and the school made a really big show of it, and the hairdresser came in and did the haircut on the day, and transformational, and they raised a lot of money. And actually, when that story went out and I shared it on social media, my own granddaughter, who lives down in South Croydon, who was 9 at the time, and her hair was right down to her bottom, decided that she wanted to do the same. And I tried to get her to do it for her own hospital, which is Croydon NHS. And she said no, she would only do it for her nana's charity. So I ended up going down to South Croydon, and I went into her primary school on the day, and I did a talk to all of the children about the work of NHS charities, not just our own up here. I did explain to them that although they had their own NHS charity down in Croydon, I've actually got ours up in the northeast, and because Emily loved me, she wanted to do it for our charity. So again, she raised a lot of money. So that happened by somebody being inspired by somebody else and then contacting us and saying, you know, can we do this?
When we say we play the best music, this is what we mean. Playing your kind of music 24 hours a day. This is Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio.
It's Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio, and I'm talking with Pat Chambers today. And we've talked about raising the money, and clearly you've raised an awful lot of money. But how do you spend the money, Pat?
Lots of different ways. So normally the wards and departments actually contact me, and they've very often come to me inspired about things that they could have in the ward or department. There is a grant application process that they need to go through, which isn't, I believe, too labour intensive, but they do need to complete the form, and it goes to the charity committee to actually consider, does it meet all of our charitable objectives? And then hopefully if it does, and it's for a good cause, and it's not equipment that the trust itself should be buying, then the charity would support the application to help make a difference. And that's been things. We started the programme talking about the MRI scanner, you know, and it becoming two scanners. But of course, for the trust, it wasn't just about getting those pieces of equipment. The trust had to fund all of the building work. And if you remember, the big crane that came in needed to be ordered 10 months ahead of the actual lift date. And it was blowing a bit of a gale on the day it was lifting. But all of those practical things, you know, here in Darlington Memorial, they went through five floors to be able to lift out the old MRI scanner and then put the new one in. But at the back of that, you know, we've funded things like retina scanners, which again, transformational bladder scanners. The difference they make to the emotional comfort for a patient and for staff being able to discreetly check if somebody's bladder is ready to be emptied. And this is in wards and departments or out in the community, is really transformational in doing that. Multifunctional monitors. Again, you can look and say, well, shouldn't the trust be buying that? But when it's explained that, you know, if you've only got one of those on a ward of 40 patients, the time it takes, and particularly during COVID, to sanitise and clean a machine in between patients, then it makes sense that you need more equipment to be able to support you to create efficiencies on the ward for staff and for the patients.
So there was an example a couple of weeks ago, wasn't there, at the MARI unit at Bishop Auckland. And I suppose that's a good example because they already had chairs in the MARI unit, but the chairs weren't as good as what they could have been. And there was a very, very inspirational gentleman that decided he wanted to do something about it.
Yes, and that's one where someone actually got in touch with me, and the gentleman was called Graham Watson. He's sadly passed now, unfortunately. he was given the diagnosis that he only had weeks to live. But in the last 4 weeks of his life, he became a man on a mission. And he was well known in the Electrical Contractors Association. He was a regional manager. He was well respected nationwide. And in the last 4 weeks of his life, he raised nearly £26,000. Because he said in all the time he'd been having his chemotherapy treatment, he'd never managed to get one of those comfy chairs. He'd always been on the sit-up and beg granny chairs, I call them. And he said what he would love as his legacy is that everybody in the Mara unit could sit in one of those comfy chairs. So just this last week, we've actually seen 14 of those chairs now go into the Mara unit. So in every one of the wards within the unit, the patients will get that comfy chair experience.
And that's putting the money directly into action with an immediate patient benefit, because you can see it's there, they're installed today, aren't they?
Absolutely transformational. I mean, the other thing that Graham mentioned, again, which we've actioned, is that it's really boring sat in the Mara unit, that they'd moved location from one floor that we're on down into another area. But moving into that other area, all the walls were just magnolia. There were no colourful pictures to look at. And through the fundraising of Graham Watson, a local art gallery across in Bishop Auckland offered to donate artwork for us and expensive prints that we wouldn't normally have, you know, been able to afford. But these were all donated, but through the legacy of somebody being inspired to do something that in turn inspired somebody else to help make a difference too.
Yeah.
It's Craig Robinson here on Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio talking with Pat Chambers. And there's loads of ways that the money's been spent, but I think one in particular thing that we should mention is the bereavement suite.
Absolutely. For me, this is quite an emotive one because I received a letter from a patient, a young mum, who sadly didn't get the opportunity to take her baby home. And she wrote a letter to me and she said, I don't know if you're the right person to contact, but I'd really like to find a way to raise money to buy a bigger bed. Because she said, sadly, when my baby died, she said, the only thing I wanted in the world was for my mom to lay on the bed and hold me the way I was holding my baby. And of course, when you think of a normal NHS delivery bed, it isn't big enough to get two adults lying on there. And I had never thought about that. And certainly in speaking with our maternity teams, they actually said at the time there was a desperate need for us to be able to get a maternity bereavement facility in the University Hospital of North Durham and also down in Darlington Memorial. And we actually started that campaign. The team put together a business case, which the trust approved, and then reached out to the charity to see if we could help fundraise it. And I'm glad to say that with another charity, supportive charity, who works predominantly in maternity bereavement for Louis, they offered to co-fund the project with CDDFT charity. And the first maternity bereavement suite was actually delivered, although it took 4 years to deliver it because of COVID and just different delays in getting materials and that. But it's now open in the University Hospital of North Durham. And of course, now we would hope that the same facility can be recreated here in Darlington Memorial, because it offers a safe space for mum, her partner and a family to be together and create memories of the baby. And it's their loved one. Find time to say goodbye, perhaps put a cool cot in the room, have family that can sit alongside and chat and be there and be supportive. Because as with any bereavement, it impacts the whole family. And we didn't have that facility, and now we've got it. So it's very impactful. And I'm very proud to have been involved in making that happen.
On your wards, across the hospitals, and on DAB Digital Radio. This is Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio.
Your kind of music, Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio.
Now, you certainly leave a legacy, Pat. I think that's fair to say. And I know it's a team effort in the charity, but you're not alone. But how much money has the CDDFT charity raised under your watch?
Well, I'm glad to say that under my watch, we've raised £3,245,000. We've actually been a conduit in helping the trust benefit, though, because we've actually spent more from the income. Bearing in mind, when we started this interview, I think I said at the start, we'd been a little bit of a savings bank. We weren't as open and proactive as we are now to encourage people to approach the charity to receive grants and support for equipment, education, services that they need. But we've actually spent, in that same period, £4,850,000. So, yeah, I think I can leave with my head held high and say I think I made a difference while I was here.
I think that is absolutely true to say, Pat. Now, I'm not going to let you go without playing your favourite song. And if you've listened to Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio before, or the Happy Hour, or the Breakfast Show where Pat has featured, there's one song in particular that she likes. And I'm going to let you, she's going to tell us why she's picked it.
I've always loved Sunshine by Dario G. And it's funny, because in my family, you know, as you get older to my age, you always say, you know, you need to make your plans to make sure that your funeral will go well and nobody's going to mess with it and it's going to be okay. And this is my exit song. So when I'm dead and gonna be buried, and they've taken me away, as they leave the church, it won't be a hymn that they play, and the hymn will be at the start and in the middle, but at the end, this is the one everybody's gonna walk out that church to.
You know what, Pat? Every time I hear this song now, I think of you. I don't know why. And I think it gets an, what's the word? More airplay on Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio, more rotation than the other songs. And I'm absolutely delighted to be playing for you, Dario G and Sunshine. Listen, Pat, it's been an absolute pleasure working with you all these years. Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio is extremely grateful to all the help that yourself and the charity has given. In fact, the fact that we're broadcasting on DAB Radio alone is down to the charity. So from everybody at Prince Bishop's Hospital Radio, a very big thank you, and we wish you all the best in your retirement.
Oh, bless you, and thank you so much. I will miss every one of you.
Stay in touch, Pat.
I will do. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.